today. When I light you up in your epiphany, you can put out the fire. Take what's inside.
You still there? Very good of you to come back, and welcome back to Down on the Farm for Series 2. I can't believe it. How they've let me back behind this microphone, who knows? I think I'll never know, you'll never know. But we're back with an amazing range of guests. Since we were last on air, I've had quite some travels, just to put it shortly. I've been out working in Kenya, I've travelled some amazing countries such as New Zealand, Australia and Thailand. And firstly, if this is the first time you're listening, welcome. Welcome to my podcast. I'm Henry Carpenter. And this is Down on the Farm podcast. Sadly, in 2020, I had a life-changing accident on the family farm, which got me basically run over by a tractor. Long story short, had a lot of years of rehab, learned some really great life lessons, met some amazing people, and really learned things about aspects of life that, at my age, a lot of people wouldn't know. And hence, I started the podcast, Down on the Farm podcast, my safe space to invite you, the listeners, and also a range of guests to come down, be interviewed, and talk openly, whether they're high up, producers, presenters, all a range of life, from just starting out, we hear from them and the stories they have to tell. So, let's introduce our first guest, shall we? Macy O'Neill, a talented singer-songwriter that I know from back in the day, from my younger years. I first noticed her, she's only a couple years younger than me, but I first noticed her when I was in theatre productions, and when you get to the high end of the school, you get the big parts, and she was getting the big parts when she was lower in the school, and at that point, that's obviously means she's going to be a big deal, and she really is. At just the age of her late teens, she is amazing, and has achieved so much, honestly. I really mean that. She's released a whole album, has a new EP just at the moment, lots of singles, and has worked with and met some of the biggest artists in the game already, such as Bastille, Scouting for Girls, and James Allen, just to name a few, and also a BBC featured artist. Her understanding of the industry and the passion she shows for it, as well as her choosing interesting and relevant topics to choose her as songs and bass and write them about, makes her an amazing and talented young person, and such an honour to interview for our first guest. And of course, it's back for series 2 for our opening episode. One thing that's back from series 1 as well is, of course, this episode's Live in the Barn. Live in the Barn we trialled with our last episode, actually, with Harry Graydon, and he played us some songs, and Macy's also going to demo and show us some songs within the episode as well, live down in the barn. So that's exciting. So let's start, shall we? Let's get series 2 on the road. Without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce the amazing young artist that is Macy O. So here we are, Macy, a massive start to your career already. Your debut album, Journeys, and your new EP. Is it Repertoire? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Because my French is awful. Some new singles as well, performing everywhere, including radio stations, stages, BBC featured as a new artist, so much more. But the Macy I last spoke to about 6-7 years ago now was definitely very different to that. So firstly, I admire how much you've come along your journey so far. Honestly, it's been great.
Thank you.
But my big first question is, what sparked it for you at the very beginning, the young Macy, the one that hadn't had this career sort of going towards it now? What was it like then?
I feel like, especially in the beginning, when, like, obviously primary school, I always knew that I liked singing in primary school, and it was just this kind of, I would do it for fun, I would love to get the main parts, do any showcases, open mics, things like that, and it was just, I fell in love with it then. And I mean, the more that I did it when I went into secondary school and got a bit older, and then I started to do my own gigs, and then I started to get into this plethora of doing all these different things, and it just kind of spiraled from there. It wasn't really like a, there wasn't like a light bulb moment in a sense. It kind of just was always developing, and sometimes I didn't consciously know that. I just kind of went along with it.
Okay, right. So that you literally, I suppose for us, I count myself as a musician. I'm pretty awful at it. Did 8 years saxophone, and then I'm training conducting and choir and orchestration. Yes. But I guess then at some point it became sort of the Macy O, it came from Macy O'Neill to the Macy O brand. Mm-hmm. So when was the point where you thought, right, this is what I want to do as a career, and this is what I want to make myself Macy O and not Macy O'Neill?
So I feel like when there was a true, like I was saying, the other bits were very, it wasn't
it wasn't a light bulb moment with the development of just my general love for music, but when it became Maceo, it was about 2022. It was funny, I've talked a little bit about this in some places, but I used to be obsessed with like wanting a stage name because I was like, my name isn't cool, I can't imagine it in lights, so I have to be called something. But after a while, I actually really warmed up to Maceo and having the O in the logo, because in my logo, like, encompasses my name. It's a symbol of this like community and this connection I like to have with people, with fans. And I feel like I've managed to make something pretty nice. There's a lot more like refining and tweaking that I'm still doing and want to carry on doing, but I'm liking how it's going, so I can't complain.
And it's great, and that's a great idea. I think you've got to create a niche as not only yourself, but you become a brand as an artist as well, because people are going to recognise your name. And then as it confidence-wise, at the start, obviously we're going from your background, I believe, mostly musical theatre, and then suddenly it's going into becoming an established artist. Was there confidence lack there at all? Or were you just like, sod it, let's do it?
It was very sod it, let's do it. I was a very, like, although I'm not a very confident socially person, like, if someone says, oh, just knock on that door and get that person for me, I'll be like, I don't know. But if someone says, oh, just get in front of those 1,000 people and sing, I'll be like, yeah, sure, let's do it. I'm completely chill with that, which is so weird. But like, I do feel like my musical theatre did help me a lot with that. And especially with finding my stage presence, my persona on stage, that kind of acting and that over-exaggerated person, just basically who I normally am. They just kind of went together and I just made this thing.
I admire the aspiration, honestly. I mean, and then it comes along your first album. Obviously, you've had a few singles. And then, obviously, Journeys. I had listened to it this morning. I'd describe it as very synthy. So not synthy, I'd say it's a modern sort of twist on sort of 80s, sort of retro modern twist, I'd say. Mix of slow and fast tempos. I'd say a bit of techno involved as well, with the synths. You describe yourself as sort of details of growing up, and then sort of loss and displacement, and then everyday struggles. So is that what you wanted to base the album about, mostly?
Yeah, I feel like when I was writing Journeys, I mean, and I've talked about this a lot, the fact that the Journeys album lineup is completely different to how it was meant to be. We were writing all these ballads, and they were these big numbers, and I was belting these massive notes, and then I was like, this just isn't me. And I just rehashed it all. I wanted to talk about just experiences in general that I'd gone through. So some songs are about people, some songs are about like certain emotions that I was feeling. And it's just like you say, the title Journeys was very about that kind of growing up and slowly experiencing those things. I feel in some of the next music I'm writing, there's still hints of that. It's a lot different now, though, because I'm writing it from an older perspective. So obviously there are things that I hadn't even experienced then that I'm now writing about and being like, oh, this happened. I don't know how I felt about it, but here we go. But I still look back on that album and love it to death.
And what was the experience of making it like? I bet it was pretty cool, but also quite, you're learning, I suppose, as you're on the job, if that makes sense, because it's your first, was it your first time properly recording?
Yeah.
So you got a production team, I assume, and then so was that struggle, or so you going to sort of school to working on the album, was that a struggle you had, or did you just think, again, sod it, we just got to make the most we can and learn on the way?
I just kind of did it. Like, I don't know, like, I was doing a lot of the stuff going into studios, and then I thought I would miss a day, and I would be like, oh, I missed a day because I was recording a song. Which was wicked. And I just, like, it was awesome to go in and experience that. Some of the days were exhausting because I would do like 8 hours of vocal recording only, and it would be like, whoa. And I was like 12, and I was like, it was just absolutely crazy. I still do like a level of that. I feel like with my vocals, I let them be freer, and I think that I'm exploring that freedom. And with a lot of more care goes into the building of the tracks, because it's that I feel that I want to kind of embellish and work on, which is why I've been working on my production skills and all of that. But yeah.
And then my favourite two tracks, the first one's called Look At Me Now. Is that great?
Oh, banger.
I love the powerfulness. And honestly, when I was looking, you close your eyes, I was almost imagining Ellie Goulding, because it was very... It's honestly the same sort of vocal range she has.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other favourite track was, of course, Our Lifetime.
Oh, that's so cute.
A beautiful... your range as well on that. Especially, I know it's 2 years ago, but I honestly, I found really, for you being so young as well, for a singer to have that range at that age is pretty, you know, incredible. For people who don't realise, when you start singing, especially if he's young, you have your younger voice and you have your mature voice.
Yep.
And to try and figure out it in between, which was still the start of that for you, was incredible. That's why I love that. And we're going to have a listen to it now. So Our Lifetime, please enjoy.
Respectable. And I feel like I've known you a lifetime. And I run with you to the end.
What a song, Macy. Thank you very much. Honestly, I hope the listeners probably aren't even listening anymore because they've gone and gone to listen to the Journeys album.
Or they're crying.
Yeah.
Like, what, that song's so emotional.
So, one of the two. And hopefully then just turned off completely. The album's come out. What happens next? As a performer, do you think you have more confidence because you've got this whole album out? Like, this is Macy. Oh, look, I've got my first album. Did that sort of happen, or was it still, oh, it's a bit humbling, I've done an album and it still doesn't make much difference, but I've had that experience now and I can sort of prove that?
I definitely think for me it made a difference. Like, lots of people do like a single, then an EP, then they do an album, and a debut album's a massive deal. Me as a 13-year-old, I was like, I want to do an album! So I did it, and I think after that, the day that it launched, I did an album launch in Ludlow Assembly Rooms. And I was 15 at the time, 250 cap venue, and we sold the venue out in about a month. And for me, that was like, wow, this clan is almost coming together. I can make something really beautiful with this. And that day, I did two flash mobs and that performance on the night, and I felt like a pop star. I was like, oh, guys, I made it. That was like I made it moment. But I didn't cry, which really surprised me.
Oh, really?
Like, I thought that at the end I was just going to be so overcome with emotion, but I didn't cry. I was like, but let's just keep going. I'm loving it. It just felt like that. And I couldn't wait to start working on more stuff. The thing I would say I regret about that is I had a long period where I didn't release any music after Journeys. I think it was because Journeys took so long and it was such a kind of, my creative juices were like, oh my God, I'm tired. So I released my next song in July 2024, and I just felt like if I had just shortened that gap a little bit, it would have benefited me quite a lot. But, you know, I can't do anything about it now.
And at school, do you think it was hard also adjusting back to going from that life of, oh my gosh, look at this, this is what I can achieve, and then back to, oh no, you've got your GCSEs to do.
Mm-hmm.
Was that hard to do?
Yeah.
I bet your parents having to rein you in a bit.
I definitely think so. I like my GCSEs, and when I did that, this was, yeah, because it was, I was just going into year 11 when I did the album launch, and then I won Song Academy. And then 2024 was a year from hell, it felt like. So trying to do music and release stuff and do exams and all this other stuff that happened in the background was just like, oh my God. But 2025.
It is. And we'll get back onto that in a minute. But I want to say one thing I commend about you is your use of socials, whether that's TikTok, Instagram, etc. You use it and you put clips up of you recording studio, day-to-day life, and all that sort of thing. I think personally, working in media myself, that is very important to create, especially the brand. Do you think that's something that you've got to focus on as well when you're creating music as an artist now in this industry?
I think so, 100%. I think it's cohesiveness is so important. Even with small things like colours, it's like it just makes someone recognisable. And it's a similar thing with sound palettes. Lots of people say music is a ground of exploration. You can explore. And it seems like a lot of people somehow just know their niche immediately. They find it, they know what sounds they want to use, they know what they want to create. And some people struggle a lot more. And I was in the latter category without a shadow of a doubt. And that's why I decided to do Repertoire as an EP where every single song is from a different genre. So I could truly explore myself, explore what music I like to make, and also, to an extent, what the listeners like.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like what I gained from that is I would definitely carry into future projects. So,
yeah, I think I'm awful at the social media stuff, but I think you agree that even the recognisable, and going back to the branding sort of side of things, it's important to move with the times and not go, look, I'm going to release an album, but you can't promote it because no one reads newspaper, or the modern person doesn't really read posters, etc. So surely there has been some kind of setback in the music career things. That maybe could be funding, it could be whatever. Has there ever been a major setback when you thought, I don't really want to do this much anymore? Is that maybe the 2024 side of things?
I think 2024, it never put me off. Like, it never put me off music. It just made things a lot harder. Especially Well, I had my exams, and then there was some other personal stuff that just made the early part of the year like eh, and then the latter part of the year just seemed to get worse. And that made making music and also making content difficult. Like, I have a media manager who I liaise with regularly. We come up with video ideas, we post them together just to make it something fun. We like to bring fun and energy to the content because that's what engages people. And that's why I also love making content with my band and my new band, because we just laugh so much doing it. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know, new information. We've only been rehearsing for about, 6-7 weeks. But it has been some of the funnest weeks that I've ever had in my life. Those two, Tom and Rudy, my drummer and bassist, they are so, so good. Both amazing players. And we also just chat about random stuff. So we have a personal connection as well. It's even better. But we're on it with our branding as well. We're all like, oh, we need matching outfits. What are our colours? Guys, we need to post on social media. What's happening right now?
I think it's definitely a rebrand. There's a lot of artists have done that. I went to see Sting recently, actually. And he used to be obviously in The Police, mm-hmm. which is totally different. And now he's doing this sort of free app, like you say, like bassist and he plays bass, then guitarist and drummer. And it's sort of rebranding themselves. And then I was like, oh, who's this? It's Sting again. But it's almost like he's a new thing.
Sting 2.0.
Yeah, literally. I didn't actually realise this until I was researching you before the episode, that you've actually recorded at Abbey Road.
Yeah.
So how was that? I mean, that's pretty cool accolade to have. Everyone's the famous Abbey Road Studios.
Yeah.
At your age, how did you get to do that?
It was wicked. That's literally all I can say. I'm sorry, I love the word wicked right now, if you can't tell. But I wrote a charity single called No Home in aid of the Ukraine crisis and everything that was going on in Ukraine. This was 2022. And I was like, I want to go to Abbey Road. I want to record in a big studio because I can. And my stepdad was saying to me, he was like, there's no way that they're going to let you book it. It's going to be so expensive. They're not going to let you book it. And I was like, can you just call them? And he was like, yeah, sure. So he called them, and the woman we spoke to, bless her little cotton socks, she's so nice. She was like, oh yeah, we have the outside studio. Ed Sheeran was meant to be in there, but he moved down to Angel, so you can have it. And I was like, okay, well, guys, I just saw the recording day of Ed Sheeran. This is cool. But we got all of our musicians from the Cavern Club, or they at least had ties there. The guitarist had played on Robbie Williams's Angels, and he was so sweet. And then we also had an amazing multi-musicianist, Joe, and he was awesome. He did all the lead sheets. It was just such a fun day, and it felt so like, it was just, I can't believe I'm here. It felt like a dream half of the day, but I still remember the majority of the day like the back of my hand, and I just love that place so much. You can just, it's one of those places where you can feel the history as you walk in. It's hard to explain, but when you go there, you know.
Everyone with the same ambition, everyone's trying to create music and promote it and doing it for a reason, so it almost feels like everyone's having a positivity check rather than, I guess, some places a bit like, oh well, I'm the only one here that actually really cares about this. So, and also you've worked with other artists of Bastille, James Arthur, Jason Allen, Scanning for Girls. What was that like? Did you get a lot of advice from them?
I definitely think I didn't get to speak to Bastille that much, but he was lovely. He saw me busking on the street, and then I ended up singing with him in Blair Castle. And the same with James Arthur. I didn't actually get to like speak to him that much. It was just kind of a cross paths kind of thing. Jason Allen and Scouting for Girls, however, I got to have much more in-depth conversations with them. Jason I still speak to occasionally sometimes, even if it's about random things like running. but he is so lovely. He was the one who is just like, just keep going, because one day you will find those people that like love you and that want to do this. And he was like, you're great, we should collab. Jason, if you're listening, we should defo collab. And he was really nice in that sense. And Scouting for Girls were also very, very, very similar. The lead singer was like, we didn't get our hit song until 2007, and we've been making music since like 2002. And I was like, okay, that is crazy. And he was like, yeah, you just eventually, sometimes without you even knowing it, you'll find a niche and you'll find those people that really, really value you. And if you think you have a good song, don't just kind of lose faith in it, in the sense, like, keep it there, because one day, and it may be years in the future, it may be tomorrow, it will, someone will grab hold of it. Someone you need that can benefit it will grab hold of it.
I think Scouting for Girls is a really good example of staged act as well, and they're really good at getting the crowd. Is that something you hold personally as well, quite, you got to interact with the audience?
Yes,
because there's different artists, some artists are just like, just outside the audience, I'm too famous now, but some obviously are just like, I want them to be engaged in the music, so when I'm on stage I've got to do the same thing.
Yeah, I think when I, because on the night I also watched them, and they were great. Like, he was jumping around at the piano. They had this tiny, because they have a song called Elvis Ain't Dead. They have this tiny little, like, wooden Elvis, and they passed it through the crowd to the back and all the way back to the front. And it was just so good. They did some really cool, like, mashups, and it was just, the entertainment value was through the roof. And that performance has stuck with me. Because I think at the end of the day, the fans and the people who are coming to watch those concerts are the number one priority, because without them, there is no music, there is no tours, there is nothing. And so I always like to put a performance on for people. And so if I'm in a more intimate venue where I do a lot of walking around, I get off stage because staying on stage is boring. I get off stage and sometimes I'll sit at a table with random people who maybe weren't paying attention to me in the beginning, but I'll be like, hey, and they'll end up smiling as I leave. And I'm just like, well, I put smiles on people's faces, and that is something that I love to do.
Oh, brilliant. And then obviously you've got this new album, Repertoire. And again, hope for saying that well. It honestly blew me away. I'm not even joking. I listened to I listened to it today again, and I just thought, oh, I was going for Jenny's, and I thought, oh, I'll have a look at the second one, and it's just a totally different vibe, but also it kind of shows how much experience you've learned through those 2 years, as in there's more complex melodies and chord changes and progressions, and tempos change really easily, and, you know, it's definitely, you can see that you've learned, and it's definitely, your vocal range is just outstanding again.
Thank you.
But honestly, tell us about it. So what's the history about this album? And obviously it's fairly new, so have you had a good experience with it so far?
Well, as I touched on briefly earlier, the idea behind Repertoire was just, it was a bit of an exploration of myself as an artist, and exploring different sounds, and just kind of like going into that and seeing what I like, what I don't like, and again also what people like, what they don't like. And because I make so much, because I make so much music and write so much different music, I was like, let's just see what I can do and what I can make that's different. And that's why I called it Repertoire as well, just because it shows the range really clearly. I've had some great responses for literally all of the songs. There's no like, I wouldn't say there's one that sticks out. I feel like Dangerous Woman, Out of Line, and My Desire, all being the leading singles, they've obviously had a bit more traction because they've had more time. But I feel like with the new ones, if I were to say one stood out, it would be The Way You Move. Lots of people loved that. They loved this kind of R&B, like, kind of subtly sassy.
I think it's a bit like Becky Hill, I thought it's quite. She's also from Worcestershire, believe it or not. From Bewdley. So, yeah. My favourite one was Alive Again, to be honest with you. I like the high tessitura, and I like how there isn't too much to it and actually focus on your voice, and personally. But the second one is Dangerous Women, which we'll play at the end. But that blew me away. I just thought that's so much in one song, and it went from, you know, boo to nothing to then boo to nothing. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, what am I listening to? And then also BBC Featured Artist. So did they just get in contact with you, or was that some sort of scheme you had to be a part of?
So with BBC Introducing, how they work is they have a specific section of their website where you can upload your music to BBC Introducing, whether it's more of a national show or whether it's a regional show. But you, no matter what, you can apply to all. Mm. If you send off to regional, like if you send off to national, it will automatically send to regional anyway. So I used to have a friend, Michaela, who used to work on the radio, and she loves my music. So every time I would submit something, she would play it. I've been Artist of the Month, I've had Song of the Week, I've had Artist of the Week. I've been on the radio many, many times with Michaela, with Claire Ashford, with the guy who does the breakfast show, Adam Green, I think his name is. But the whole team there, they're absolutely amazing. Again, I cannot fault them. And I feel like the experience on the radio have been really helpful, not only in reach for music, but also in my communication skills. I know I'm sounding like a personal statement right now.
yeah, TV.
But hear me out. But whenever I go to interviews or podcasts, the more that I talk to people about it, because I used to hate talking about myself, and whenever I talked about myself, I would be like, yeah, and I've done this and I've done that. But now I can openly talk about it because I know people are potentially interested in my story and where I've come from and what I've done.
Yeah, you've got to have that skill, haven't you? I think if you want to be a musician, you've got to be able to have the backstory to
PR training.
Yeah, literally PR training. It is literally. And what's the future for Mysto? So I know we've just discovered, I know there's a new album. Is there, obviously finishing school, is there going to be some sort of more performances or et cetera? Or?
100%. I think there's a amazing support slot in a show in Shrewsbury coming up. More to be revealed on that in the future, because the artist who we're hopefully supporting is currently on tour in Europe. So, I'm very excited. But I can't say what that.
Get researching Maceo fans.
And I've got, I'm working on my next album. I'm, I would say about a quarter of the way writing through the songs. I'm putting a lot of work into these songs because they are going to mean a lot to especially me and also to many other people in my specific age group. It's going to be heavily nostalgic, have these kind of almost, I want it to have a wholesome this and this tone of fulfillment. So I'm really exploring how to deep into that. And then also next year, especially, lots of collabs.
Oh,
I've been talking to a lot of different artists. I'm doing one with a male artist who's making his debut very soon, a female artist who is absolutely amazing. Her voice is like, oh my God, her name's Izzy, and she is just phenomenal. And so I'm very, very honoured to be on a track with her. The track sounds great. It's so like, it's like this poppy, cutesy, I'm it kind of vibe, but I'm really loving it, and there is a lot happening, and I'm very excited to share it with everybody.
Exciting stuff. And it's, I know every musician is different. Is the long-term goal sort of setting up stadiums and being, you know, number one? Is that the long-term goal?
Or is
it just going to take it as you see it, and we'll see how it goes?
I think that would be amazing, and I would love to do that in my future. I'm aware the industry is extremely competitive, but I will try my utmost to, if I can do sold out shows and get people singing my songs back to me, things like that are those the important things to me, to know I've impacted someone or helped somebody. If I could know that, that would mean 10 million times more than doing a sold out stadium show.
I think that's quite toxic sometimes, that a lot of people join the industry just to totally agree with you. I think you've got to be in it, invested in it, because you love music and because you want to share it with others, and not be the person that's gonna like, oh, I'm number one now, I've done my dream, because usually you get to that top and a lot of people said it and
then they're done.
And then you've got that toxic mess of, what do I do now?
Yeah,
and no one cares about you anymore because you don't actually understand music and you don't really but so how can people get in contact with you? Obviously your social media for bookings, etc. We'll leave that all below, but honestly, you should be very proud of yourself and how far you've come.
Thank you.
Too. Yeah, thank you. But I remember your passion when you were younger is like musical theatre, when you got a cast and all that different stuff, and that passion's even greater now, and look what you created at your age. Honestly, it's great. So thank you for coming on. Could you do me the pleasure of introducing Dangerous Women for our last track?
Okay. I love this song. This song is a Beyonce Shakira inspired track, very Latin sorcery, and this is called Dangerous Women. I've been Maceo.
Staring at me from across the room, turn tonight, I don't want that attitude. I see you. I'm my own woman, make my own rules. I'm the queen bee, baby, you're the fool. I see you. Baby, direct your gaze to me, and I might shake my ass if you're lucky. Running like a toner, on a leash. I'll walk away for you, even get a piece. Cause it's dangerous, dangerous.
so heavy, but you don't wanna go home. Only my side. In a tight dress with my 6-inch heels, ride right tonight, you're sure you can't deal. I see you. Baby, I'm on something else today. When I light you up in your epiphany, you can put out the fire. Take what's inside. Baby, direct your gaze to me. And I might shake my ass if you're lucky. But I'm in control now, I'm not on a leash. I'll be going for you and get a piece. Because it's dangerous, dangerous. But tonight you can show me just how you do. I'm a dangerous, dangerous woman to know.
What a song! That's been Maceo on Down the Farm podcast live in the barn session. What an utterly talented young woman Macy is. If you'd like to go and listen to any of her music, I'll leave all the links to all her pages, including social media, down in the description below. Firstly, thank you for listening for the first brand new episode of a brand new series. Here's a new catchphrase we're using on the end of this podcast, on every podcast episode on Down the Farm podcast. The catchphrase is, don't be afraid to go down the pub and give your fellow mates a hug. And I think that is the best catchphrase we can use, really, in these times, in these uncertain times, especially with so much uncertainty and conflict going on in the world. The most agricultural saying I think we could be, go down the pub and give your fellow mates a hug. Let them know you love them and let them share the wisdom that you've learned from the podcast. So, if you're new, go and listen to Series 1. Check out all the other episodes we have out there. Follow us on Down on the Farm podcast on socials and don't be afraid to get in touch with any queries or questions or information at Down on the Farm podcast, of course. And of course, here's our latest catchphrase, the new catchphrase to end the episode off. Don't be afraid to go down the pub and give your fellow mates a hug. We'll see you next week, everybody. Cheers.